Okay, let's begin. We're up to Perek Chaf Beis. We're up to the beginning of Perek Chaf Beis. Okay, Vayomer David. Zehu Beis Hashem Hulukim. After the Malach put his sword back in its sheath, Hashem told the Malach not to continue with the Magefa. The Magefa should come to an end. David recognized that this is the location. This we discussed this last week. This is the location where the Beis Hamikdash was meant to be built. What? Perek Chaf Beis. We're at the Perek Chaf Pasuk Aleph. Perek Chaf Beis Pasuk Aleph. The beginning of Perek Chaf Beis. Divrei Hayom Aleph. Make sure you're Divrei Hayom Aleph, not Divrei Hayom Beis. Divrei Hayom Aleph Perek Chaf Beis. So last week we concluded the story of David made a fatal mistake by counting Klal Yisrael. David, in preparation for the building of the Beis Hamikdash, he wanted to see what the numbers of the population of Klal Yisrael. He made a mistake. He counted them, and Yoav tried very hard to prevent him, to convince him not to do so. David refused to listen. He counted. There was a Magefa. The Malach comes and tells him, the God comes to him in the name of Hashem and says, Hashem is giving you a choice. You could have one of three punishments. Which one would you like? David selected the Magefa. And as the Magefa was about to come upon Klal Yisrael, David was mispalel. He said to Hashem, why should the people suffer? I'm the one who committed the sin. Let the suffering come upon me, upon my family, not upon Klal Yisrael, not upon these innocent sheep. And Hashem listened, and the Magefa stopped. Now, it doesn't mean the Magefa stopped 100%, because the Pasuk says simply that there were 70,000 people who died. On the other hand, it says in the Medrash that the only one who died was Avishai, David's nephew. There's a third Medrash, which I wanted to present to you, and the one who died was God. God died. God was the Navi, the prophet, and David's four children, and a collection of Zikanim, Gedolei Hadar. So it says 70,000, so that could also be interpreted to mean that the people who died were Shakel Kneget, 70,000 members of Klal Yisrael. Very interesting. It's God, four of David's children, and the Zikanim. So three different Mahalchim to know who died, simply 70,000 people. Or Avishai, that second interpretation, just one person. Or the third interpretation, God, four of David's children, and the Zikanim that were with David. There's another Medrash. Before we go further, just want to just tie up some Midrashim. We mentioned that there's a contradiction when David, as to how much money David paid for the threshing floor of Aravna Hayivusi. David saw the Malach Hashem standing at the threshing floor of Aravna Hayivusi, and David and he was mispalel. Hashem answered his prayers. David took this as a sign that this is a holy makom, a holy location, and indeed it was revealed to David at that point in time that this shall be the place of the Beis Hamikdash. Now at that point in time, David purchased this land from Aravna. So the pasuk here says 600 coins of gold. Now, I don't know the significance. Avraham Avinu purchased the Machpelah for 400 arba meos shekel kesef over la socher. That was 400 coins of silver. 400 in Chazal is always used as the totality, the highest number, because in the Aleph Beis, the last letter, the Aleph Beis, the letter Tav. So Tav is the numer, has a numerical value of 400. So Avraham Avinu paid as much money as one can possibly pay in this world, the most money you can possibly pay. Here, David paid even more. I do not know what the significance is, but it says here that David paid 600. He topped Avraham Avinu by 200. Not only did he top by 200 coins, he paid gold coins. And gold is worth a lot more, even 25 times more the value of silver in time of Chazal. That's what it seems. You have the Gemara very often that they have 25 coins of silver equals one coin, approximately, I mean, different types of coins of gold. Okay,
Jews don't know the penny.
What?
Jews don't know.
Never. 25, but he paid 600 coins of gold. Now, we mentioned last week that there's a discrepancy because in Sefer Shmuel, Rashi quoted this discrepancy. It says that David only paid 50 shkolim. So Rashi gave one answer, which is only a partial answer, that he collected 50 shkalim from each one of the 12 shvatim. So 50 times 12 equals 600, which means everyone in Klal Yisrael had to have a chelik, a portion in the Makom HaMikdash, because David did not want that the place of the Mikdash should belong to one Shevet. If David would pay for it out of his own pocket, that means it would belong to his family, or it would belong to Shevet Yehuda, and then there would be some bad feeling between other members of Klal Yisrael, so that they do not really have a portion in the land that is used to build the base HaMikdash. David wanted to avoid any bad feeling, any machlokes, and therefore he had everyone contribute equally. That's a very nice interpretation. Yeah, but then at a later point in time, his descendants will say, "You have no chelik." They'll say to other members of Klal Yisrael, "Leave! You have no chelik. We paid for this. This was purchased by our great grandfather David. Therefore, it's only for us, and no one else has any chelik. No one has any rights to come here without paying rent, without paying tribute, or having respect for us. So, it's not necessarily a good idea." Sometimes it's good to pay for it, sometimes it's not so good, it all depends on the circumstance. David felt it was in the best interest of Klal Yisrael that everyone should have a chelik. Now the problem is, and the numbers add up, 50 times 12 is 600. However, there's a major discrepancy which Rashi does not address, is that here it says gold, and there it says silver. So when you pay 50 shkolim of silver and multiply by 12, that's going to give you 600 coins of silver. That does not equal 600 coins of gold. So the discrepancy remains. So the answer to that, some of us want to learn that it means that they paid silver coins equal 50 shkolim of gold. In other words, they didn't pay 50 coins of silver. They paid whatever the number was, whatever the calculation was, an enormous amount of silver that would have equaled 50 shkolim of gold. So then when you multiply 50 by 12, you'll have 600, but it was not actual gold, silver coins, because of course that would not equal the proper value, the value of 600 coins of gold. Another interpretation that's given by the Gemara and by the Medrash is that the Mekoyim of the Mizbeach was 50 coins of silver. But the value of the entire Har Habayis, the entire area, that was 600 coins of gold. So we are discussing two different pieces of property. The actual Mekoyim HaMizbeach, Mekoyim HaMikdash, or the larger area, the whole Har Habayis.
He bought the whole area.
Right, so we have a discrepancy. That's the discrepancy. It says here that he bought the area for 600 coins of gold, and it says in Sefer Shmuel that he bought this thing for 50 coins of silver. So there's obviously a discrepancy both in number and in the currency, in the commodity. And the answer, one of the popular answers given in the Medrash, is that there in Sefer Shmuel refers to the very precise location of the Mizbeach. Where the Mizbeach was located. Right, that's what it says here in Sefer Divrei Hayyam. The entire.
How did that measure say what people.
Because there's a contradiction. It says in Sefer Shmuel he paid 50 shkolim of silver. It says in Divrei Hayyam David paid 600 coins of gold. There's a discrepancy. The answer is the entire area was purchased for 600 coins of gold, but the location of the Mizbeach was 50 shkolim of silver. Okay, that is another important point. Now, there's something else that's very interesting, which ties into this week's parasha. It doesn't say anywhere here that David was instructed by Hashem to offer sacrifices. All it says here is the Malach comes to David and tells him to build a Mizbeach. Now, simply you will understand. Yeah, let me read you the pasuk. If you go back to pasuk Yudches, back in Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk Yudches, Umalach Hashem Omar El God, Lemar Le David, say to David, Kiyale David should ascend, Lehokim Mizbeach La Hashem, to establish a Mizbeach for Hashem, Begoyren Ornon Hayevusi. The Malach in the name of Hashem never told David to actually offer sacrifices. David then goes over Yal David Var God Asher Dibesh Hashem, and he goes and he purchases this piece of land, and then Ornon says says, you know what, here you can take the animals and you can offer the animals as sacrifices. The only one that really recommends that sacrifices be offered on the Mizbeach was Arnon. It was not necessarily Hashem's command. And indeed, this is the Gra. Look at the Gra, and these Pesukim of the Gra is an amazing thing. There was no requirement to actually offer sacrifices. Hashem, there's such a concept, and it's very hard to understand what this means. I don't know what it means. There's such a concept of just building a Mizbeach. You build a Mizbeach for Hashem, but you don't do anything, you don't offer sacrifices. Offering sacrifices, that's a man-made idea, that's something which is not directly commanded by Hashem. And we have that in this week's parsha, Avraham Avinu, Vayiven Mizbeach Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. He builds a Mizbeach, and he calls out in the name of Hashem. Nowhere does it say in Parashas Lech Lecha, when Avraham Avinu, when he left Haran, he went to Eretz Yisrael, that he offered sacrifices on the Mizbeach. He built a Mizbeach. Now we automatically assume, what else are you going to build a Mizbeach? A Mizbeach has to be perfectly square, it has to have corners. The whole purpose is to offer a sacrifice and sprinkle the blood. That's true. That's the way we are. We understand the Mizbeach based upon Chazal. But it appears from the Gra, from the very literal translation of the Pesukim, that there's something more to a Mizbeach than actually taking an animal and sacrificing it and collecting its blood and pouring it on the Mizbeach. Vayikra b'shem Hashem. It serves as a base, a home base to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really what it says over here. It doesn't say that Hashem told him, it just says that Hashem told him to build a Mizbeach, he built a Mizbeach. Ornan said, listen, you built a Mizbeach already. I got some animals. I got some wood. Why not go the next step, take the wood, take the tools, and take the animals, and offer it. David did it at the encouragement of Ornan, but it was not part of Hashem's direct request.
How about the Mizbeach of the Mishnah?
So the Mizbeach of the Mishnah Torah is very clear, you do bring sacrifices.
No.
Yeah, but that's the Mizbeach of the Mishkan. But the Mizbeach that's mentioned by Avraham, and even by perhaps some of the other of us, I don't know the Pesukim well, Yitzchak and Yaakov, they built the Mizbeach, not necessarily were those altars used for sacrifices. It says that Yitzchak, he poured oil on the Mizbeach, but not necessarily is every Mizbeach meant to slaughter an animal. It could be that it's a place where it's dedicated to Davin, to daven to Hashem, to serve Hashem, to pray to Hashem. Okay, now there's one other thing I want to mention about the previous perek. It says here in Pasuk Choftes that at this point in time, David selected this place to be the place of the future Beis HaMikdash, but in the meantime, the Mishkan was located in Givon. Right, Noi v'Givon. We discussed this last week, and when it describes the Mishkan of Moshe in Givon, it's described that Moshe constructed the Mishkan. But that's not true. If we go to Parshas Tetzaveh, Truma Tetzaveh, Vayakal Pekudei, who's the one who constructed the Mishkan? Bezalel. Aholiyav, Ben Achismach, L'matei Dan, and Bezalel. So why does it say here, look at Pasuk Chavtes, U'mishkan Hashem, Asher Oso Moshe Vamidbar, U'mizbach Oilo Bo Esachid Babama Begivain. So let me read you the Medrash. The Medrash is something that's very, very powerful. How could the Pasuk here say that Moshe Oso? The word Oso is a very powerful word. It doesn't say that Moshe, it was on his name. Oso! The word Asa means Moshe Rabbeinu himself actually constructed. He got his hands. He did it. So
with the management.
The same word is used Bitzalel. The Oholiyav v'chol ish chacham leif. Ela Moshe l'salmid. Moshe taught Bitzalel what to do. He instructed him, and Bitzalel Asa mikan omru Rabbeinu. Litein Sochar Lim Aseh Ko'iseh. The one who caused, the one who is instrumental in causing other people to do something, gets reward as if they themselves did. It's an incredible idea that if you use your influence upon other people to accomplish things, to accomplish great things, the reward in the next world is given not only to the one who actually brought out the plan to fruition, but the one that inspired and taught this what should be done. to the one that causes something to be done, ka'oseh, the same reward like the one who actually does it. Shekhin Watsim b'moyesha sh'osa b'tzala l'malachas ha-mishkan v'hela olav ha-kadosh baruch yilu hu asa tzik yilu that Moshe Rabbeinu himself built the Mishkan. That's very appropriate here in these psukim in Sefer Divrei Yom, when we're discussing David. David was obviously very sad that God told him, you will not build the, or Nasan told him, you will not build the Beis HaMikdash. And we go through these parakim here where David does everything that he possibly can, we'll have more examples soon, to do to prepare the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Everything he did, he went to war to collect gold and silver and to lay the foundation and to find, probably the most important thing was to discover the exact location where the Beis HaMikdash is in preparation for the actual construction, which will be done by his son Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, there is one other thing I wanted to mention. Another one of the medrash to talk about some loose ends. This is just back in Pasuk Tes Vav. In Pasuk Tes Vav, the Malach was about to bring havoc upon Klal Yisrael, to bring a Churban. The Malach had its sword unsheathed, was waving its sword. It was turned towards Klal Yisrael. Let me read you the Pasuk Tes Vav in Perek Chof Aleph. Vayishlach v'alekim Malach liYerushalayim lehashchisa, to destroy it. Uche hashchis, as the Malach was about to destroy, ro Hashem vayinochem. Hashem saw, Hashem contemplated what would be, and he had charata. Vayinochem, he changed his mind al hara. V'yemel Malach hamashchis raf, enough. Ata now heref yodecha, release, let go of your power. Put the sword back in its sheath. Umalach Hashem Oymed im Gorin Oron Hayavusi. And the Malach at that point in time was standing in the threshing floor of Oron Hayavusi. So it's a very beautiful medrash which goes through the entire Tanakh. It's not a medrash, I'm sorry, it's a Gemara Masechta Brachos, the very end of Masechta Brachos, Daf Samach Beis, and goes through Tanakh and finds every time we have the word Ra'ah, Hashem saw something good. And it says when Hashem looked, he looked at these beautiful events in history, and that was an inspiration, or that was a zikaron lifnei Hashem to hold back and prevent a magev from coming on Kaishal. For example, let me just read some of the words. Mara, the Gemara Masechta Brachos says, what exactly did Hashem see in this pasuk? Uche hashchis ro Hashem vayinochem. What did he see? Omarath, ro Yaakov Avinu. Hashem looked at the memory of Yaakov came before him. Tachsev vayoymer Yaakov ka'asher ro'om. So it's a typical medrash, but it's a Gemara. When Yaakov Avinu, when he saw the machne, the malachim, Yaakov was traveling after he met with Esav. Vayoymer Yaakov ka'asher ro'om machne l'kim zeh. He said, so there it says the word ro'om. It says the word ro'om in connection with Yaakov. So the medrash, the Gemara, makes a drasha. We use that word ra'am as a trigger. This is what Hashem saw, the zechus of Yaakov Avinu. Another example. Shmuel says, Efer shel Yitzchak ra. He saw the ashes of Yitzchak. Yitzchak was meant to be offered out as a korban at the Akedah. Shneemar, Elokim yireh loy haseh lo'oila b'ni. So yireh, may Hashem see. So you have the word Yira associated with Yitzchak. Same thing, Hashem remembered the source of Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Afra Amar, Kesef Kippurim Ra. He saw, and here it's not the word, I don't know where the word Ra, there is no word Ra. Hashem saw that Moshe Rabbeinu, he collected Machsa Shekel for atonement. Okay, let me give you another example. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Beis HaMikdash, Hashem saw it was the future that Hashem, Bahar Hashem Yeroeh. Okay, so different ideas of taking the word Ra'ah, different zechusim which Hashem saw in order to hold back, not to bring a magev upon Klal Yisrael. Now we come, yeah.
Pasuk Yud Zayin, Hayomid David El Elohim.
Pasuk, which Pasuk?
Yud Zayin.
Okay.
Hashem uses Malachim to deal.
Okay.
Nowhere, how does David speak directly? He says, Vayomer.
Well, that's all that. Well, we do it three times a day. He was informed. He received a message. He received a message from God. And David now is mispalel to Hashem. Why is it any different than what we do three times a day? We daven to Hashem olifnei
amelach. Because they use the term vayomer.
So we also say vayomer. We also daven. When we daven, we're also in the category of vayomer. When you daven today shachars, you also spoke to Hashem.
Mispalel.
It's the same thing. What's the difference? Vayomer David elolakim. It's we daven. It's we daven to Hashem.
We have plenty of times in the Chumash the whole. If you take a look at the Ramban, he makes very big distinctions early on about the conversations they had with the Ovos, and he says a lot of them were in trances and dreams because Chas v'Shalom, to put him on a level with Moshe Rabbeinu, that was Asbach Lari Al-Mira. Look at the Ramban. Somebody asked me, how come he makes the whole thing like the next week's parsha? That it's a dream, and why would he say it makes the God say, Vayera, they talk back and forth, and he says, Chas v'Shalom, shouldn't say that's exactly what happened.
So what does it mean here?
Because they didn't talk directly, it was a vision they had, or whatever it is.
It means he was misspelled on their level. We don't know, whatever, we don't know how to relate to this.
Take a look, but not true.
Okay, let's go to Parucha Beis. Vayomer David Zehu Beis Hashem Holokim Zem Mizbeach Lo'olam Yisrael. David at this point in time had a prophecy. That's how many Mefarshim learn. He had a prophecy that this location, there was a silver lining in this horrible tragedy of the loss of his four sons, of God, of 70,000 people, of Avishai, that it was now revealed to David the precise location of the future Beis HaMikdash. This pasuk, L'shichnei Sidrushu Uvos HaShama, the goal of coming to Eretz Yisrael to build a place for the resting place for the Shechinah of Hashem, was finally revealed to David at this moment in time when Hashem held back. Hashem expressed restraint not to bring harm to Klal Yisrael. So David said, "This will be Zehu Beis Hashem. Beis Lokim. This is it. This is the location of the Beis Hamikdash. Zeh Mizbeach Oil Yisrael. And on this location, we will build the Mizbeach to bring oilos, which means why oilos, the Mesudah says, because most of the korbanos that are offered on the Mizbeach are oilos, even though we bring chatois and shlamim and other types of korbanos, but since most are oilos, that's why it's called oilos li Yisrael. That is a very great difficulty, because there are other sources, other midrashim, which indicate that it was revealed to David the location of the Beis HaMikdash a lot earlier in his life. There's the famous story with Achitovel, with the Shisin. David, I don't know the dates, but it was much earlier in David's life when David was digging and he pulled out a stone and it wanted to flood the entire world, and David had to write Hashem's name on a piece of parchment and throw it into the water. It should be erased. He did not know the halacha. He asked Achitovel. There are many different stories. Okay, there are other midrashim. I don't recall the midrashim, but the Mefarshim cite different sources that seem to indicate that it was much earlier in David's life when it was revealed to him the precise location of the future Beis HaMikdash. And here, the pasuk seems very clear. Zehu Beis Hashem Elokim, Zeh Mizbeach Lo'olam Yisrael. So how do we reconcile these contradictions? So I don't know. I don't have a good answer. The answer could be generally, some of the answers border on that David, earlier in his life, he knew the approximate location, but did not know the precise location. Now it was revealed exactly to the inch, to the smallest measuring point, exactly where. Exactly. Or it could be that David, it was revealed. There was a raglayim ledavar. There was a scientific guess. It was a hypothesis. It was likely. It wasn't concrete. This is where it was 100% certain. There was raglayim ledavar that the other location should be the place of the Beis HaMikdash. But now at this point in time, it was crystal clear through an open prophecy that this shall be the final resting place of the Mokom HaShechina. It's interesting to note that the Mokom HaShechina, it's not said anywhere. It's interesting that it's not part of the Animamins. There are certain things in Tanakh, in Yadus, it doesn't say anywhere. There are no, like the 13 Animamins of the Rambam. doesn't say there's no proof to these things. These are fundamental principles of faith. The Mekoyim HaMikdash, that this is the precise location, L'shichnoi Sidushu Uvosa Shama, is nothing more than it's faith. We have faith that David, through God, Hashem revealed this is the Mokom. And that's an amazing thing. We rely upon that Amunah. Nowhere in Tanakh does it say this is the location. Yeah?
What about the Shadrach, you know, Yaakov, when he had his head down on the stone? Isn't that the Mokom?
Yes, so there was a tradition, but also, so how do we know that that's the location? Just because Yaakov Avinu, he built in Basel, he went and he built a Mizbeach, just because Avraham Avinu offered Yitzhak on the Arcade in this location, just because Noah offered a carbon on this location, Adam, there were many people who offered carbonos, Adam, Noah, Avraham, Yitzhak the Arcade, and Yaakov. And in fact, the Medrash says that David discovered their Mizbeach. What does it mean? When it says here, Zeh Beis Hashem Elokim, David, he found, it was, I guess, you know, they did some digs, archaeological digs. Really, that's what it says. They did in the process of Arnon Hayavusi, giving over the animals, they uncovered the Mizbeach of Adam, the Mizbeach of Noach, the Mizbeach of the Akedah, and the place of Yaakov Avinu. It was discovered at this moment in time. And also it was a prophecy that this shall be the location of the Hashrash Hashchina for the future Beis HaMikdash. But again, it's just because Adam offered a carbon does not necessarily mean that's where we have to have the Beis HaMikdash. Just because the Akedah took place there, that doesn't mean, listen, that Matan Torah was given in the desert on Har Sinai. Where is Har Sinai today? We don't even know. We don't know for sure. Okay, there are different suggestions. They go out. They do some exploration, whatever they do. But we don't know for sure. It's not important. It's not important where it was. The place that Hashem will choose, He will choose. Yet we have a moon up shoot of this is the location. We learned Sefer Yeshayahu. We came across a fascinating Mefarish that explains that's why throughout Melachim you always find this problem with the Bamos. We have many kings, and every king, some of them get high praise. Rak HaBamos. There's only one problem with this Melech. He was unable to remove the private Bamos through the land. There was a Beis HaMikdash, and even though when there is a Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to offer Karbonos and private Bamos. And these particular kings, almost all of them, were unable to convince Klal Yisrael to abolish the private bamos in their backyards. What's going on? Why was this such a problem? So simply you learn that people in those times had a tremendous desire to serve Hashem, and it was an avera lishma. They couldn't hold back. They had to go to the backyard and offer a carbon to Hashem. So, cut your losses. It's not always kedai for the rabbi and the shul to make an issue over every little thing. I once heard from a rabbi, they read the Pebalach during Chazaras Hashatz. Right? They read all these Pebalach. It's wrong. It's osur. Api halacha, during Chazaras Hashatz, you're not allowed to learn, you're not allowed to read the Pebalach. It's osur. So the rabbi, should I go make a fight and tell everyone in shul it's osur? I rather save my arrows for bigger battles. Right? Rabbi Berlwein says, when a rabbi retires, he has to have some arrows left in his quiver. If he doesn't have any arrows left, there's only that many arrows a rabbi can shoot to use of his goodwill. It's not kedai to make an issue over these type of things. Same thing. It was a terrible avera. You're not allowed to offer shchut echutz, but people did this because they couldn't control their desire to serve Hashem. It wasn't kedai for the milk to make a world civil war over the bamos. That's how most of the Farshim learned the Pesuk in a very simple level. However, there's a much deeper interpretation. And that is, people did not, we take this for granted. Today, the Mokom Hashchina is the base of Yerushalayim. In early times, just because David went and God told him, and this private story with Aravna HaYavusi was selected, who says this is the final resting place of the Shechina? Was Gilgal the final resting place? No. Was Shiloh the final resting place? No. Was Nov the final resting place? No. Was Gilgal the final resting place? No. Okay, so now we're in Yerushalayim. Who says Yerushalayim is the final resting place of what the Pasuk says, L'shichnai Sidr Shu'u Vasa Shama? It's nothing more than a bama. If it's a bama, so we allow to have a bama katana in our backyard. If it's the bama gedoyla, then it triggers the prohibition. You're not allowed to have private bamas. But if this is nothing more than a bama gedola, b'shas a bama gedola, you could have a bama katana. That's the halacha. So people continue to have a bama katana in their backyard because they did not believe with full conviction that this place in Yerushalayim, although it's a magnificent structure, was the final resting place. Look, there were problems in the world. The world was a dangerous place. You can't say Mashiach came. If Mashiach didn't come, maybe when Mashiach will come, there'll be a final resting place. It's not the Altar Nachla. Who knows? Maybe Beis Shemesh will be the place of the Beis Hamikdash. Right? Who knows? So it's going to be an Eretz. It has to be an Eretz Yisrael. It has to be an Eretz Yisrael. But we're in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe down south, maybe near Eilat, maybe up north, who knows, yeah?
Can you equate the Makom HaShechinah to the Makom where the Aron HaKodesh is going to be?
Yes, that's all part of it. The Makom HaShechinah
is... So it wasn't brought to the Aron HaKodesh?
Moment in time, the Aron was in Ir David. The Aron was not yet on this location. The Aron was in a separate tent. In Ir David, it was not yet in this location, and the Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu was far away. That was in Givon. It was divided, and now we have a third place. Look what's going on. We have three places. The Mishkan is in Givon. The Aron is in a tent in Ir David, right across the street from King David Hotel, literally David's palace. David has a palace. He's living in his palace, and across the street is a tent which is housing the Oron. And now, look at this. We've discovered a new holy place. We've done some archaeological digs, and we've found the Mizbeach of Adam, of Noach, of the Akedah, and Yaakov Avinu. And this is going to be the future site for the Beis HaMikdash. People are looking at David. Who says? David had a lot of enemies. David had a lot of enemies. And David's going to be Roy David, who's sitting with Bathsheba. He's going to be the one. Avshalom, his own son, wanted to kill him. He's going to be the one to tell us the final location of L'shich Nesidishu Vasa Shama. Who says? And he had opposition. And this went on for hundreds of years. This went on for 400 years. Until the very end, when Yoshiyahu finally convinced, I think it was Yoshiyahu finally convinced him, he was able to get rid of the Bamos. What does it mean, the last king got rid of the Bamos? I think it was Yoshio. He was able to convince them David was right. This is the final resting place. This is it. You know, it's like people can argue about this, like the state of Israel. Is it part of the process of Geula? Right? So already for 70 years, everyone said, no, it's not. You know, this is, it's not. It's through the Zionists. Apikarsim and this and this, and then comes the point people begin to realize, you know, maybe it was part of the process of Geula. Maybe all of these things that happened, but when it happened, B'shas Maisa, everyone is saying it can't be. History repeats itself. They didn't believe this pasuk, the critical pasuk. David here says, David zehu beis Hashem hu elokim, v'zeh mizbach lo oilo li Yisrael, and therefore, no more bamos. That's it. When there's a kiloi bos marot el hamenucha, the pasuk says you can have in your backyard a bama kitana. Why? But when you come to the Nachla, no more. David now makes a statement. Guess what, Rabbi Isai? This is the Nachla. You're finished. No more bamos. You want a carbon? You got to come to Yerushalayim. This pasuk has been challenged for 400 years. And that's why every single king, that tzaddik yisoid olam, rak habamos lo hesir. But he couldn't get rid of the bamos. That's his only chait. He couldn't convince Klal Yisrael that this was all part of the Geula, this part of the Nachala. Yeah.
He said that the Magefa was caused by that they rebelled against God.
Yes, three times. The Medrash says this.
Yeah. So this is right after the Magefa.
Correct.
And they're rebelling again.
What, in not believing David, that this is the Nehunacha? Okay, that in a way, yes, that's true. Yes.
It's good enough for my fault.
That's right. It's true. There's always some degree of rebellion. Nothing is simple. Even when it appears everyone is loyal, deep down inside a person's heart, there's always some, I have a complaint against this one, against that one. Nothing in life is the way it seems. We all know that. It's no big secret. Everything has many, many shades of gray and many layers and layers within layers of reasons. Okay, let's go further.
The root where the Ten Shvatim developed their own Mizbechim.
Well, that was much later. We're not to that yet.
Yeah.
That was much later.
It's only Zman Yerov on the
three generations. So David is still alive. Shlomo's not even born yet. I mean, maybe he's born yet, but we're still riding high. We're still in the engagement period. Like we said, the happiest time in life is during the engagement period. When everything is rosy, everything is the outlook. That's the point in time we are right now. When David is now planning to build the Beis HaMishkan. Let's just be a little bit pasuk base. Oh, let's see at least the Rashi and the Mitzudas and Pasuk Aleph. Let's see the Mitzudas and Pasuk Aleph. Zehu b'mokim azeh yivne habayis, mizbach leilu. Why is it called the oila? You bring on this mizbeach many korbanos. Chatos, ashamos, shlonim. So Mitzudas says, lefi sheroiv ha-korbanos ha-kevuim heima oilois. That's an interesting idea. I don't think the average person would think like that. Most korbanos on the mizbech are oilos. Most of us associate the mizbech with kapar, atonement. And atonement are chatos. So he says, no, that's not the way it is. People come to give gifts, donations, gifts that come close to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Oilos is something which you really use not so much for kapar. Chazal say, it's mechaper on machshavos, on evil thoughts. But evil thoughts do not require one to bring a korban. It's voluntary. Primarily, the reason why you bring a korban oila is to give a gift, to come close to Hashem. And it says, that's Sheroiv HaKorbanos HaKavuim Heima Oilos Lezeh Nikra Mizbach Oila. That itself is an idea. The Ikar purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to come close. It's secondary to receive atonement. Okay, you need atonement. But that's not, it's not all bad. The world is not, the focus is not Sumera. The focus of life shall always be positive. Asay tov, come close to Hashem. Let's see the Rashi Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer David Zehu Beis Hashem Elokim Bezeh Mizbach Leilu Yisrael Mikan Ve'Elech Shekol HaMavakesh Hashem. So Rashi says, from now on, anyone that wants to serve Hashem, to seek at Hashem, L'Hakrev Lo Karbon, Yetze V'Yakrev Al Oisoy Mizbeach. In other words, Givoin is going to soon to be retired. Right, the Mishkan wasn't Givoin. That's where the Mizbeach of Moshe was standing. That's going to be retired. You want to bring a carbon, you come now to this new location, and that also means this is the Nachla, like we explained, and no more Bamos Ketanos. Now let's see Pasuk Beis. David said, Lichnois es Hagedim, Kenu Sugya. David now says, we got to build the Beis HaMikdash. That is a fascinating Rashi here. Rashi basically says, let's just say outside and do it inside. Rashi basically says, we need slave labor. This is very shocking pasuk. We're going to need slave labor to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's not going to be easy to drag and to schlep heavy stones and to mine metal and chop down trees and draw water. It's hard work. So would you rather be out in Kailo? Or you rather be out in the hot sun, enjoying water? So who's going to do all the hard, crushing labor? So it says here, the gerim. Now the gerim does not mean a ger tzedek. It means people that are living, the sojourners. People that are living in the land. So some is the skosh, some limits the gevinim. It's right, exactly. Exactly. According to some means the gevinim, those that tricked, they tricked Klal Yisrael, they made a treaty with Klal Yisrael that was illegal. They disguised themselves as being from a foreign land when really they were the Canaanim, which had to be driven out. And they disguised themselves, and Yoshua really could have killed them. But in order that it should not be a Chil Hashem, because the UN was on the case, So they he let them live in the land, but he made them into water carriers and wood choppers. So they did the hard, crushing labor, and it is to they and it's those that are like them that we're calling here the Gerim, Asher B'Eretz Yisrael. No, they were not allowed to. It was forbidden for them to marry. They're the lowest status of the ten yuchsin. They were not allowed to intermarry. They were limited who they can marry. Asher B'Eretz Yisrael, Vayamed Vayamed Chaitzim, and he established them as woodcutters. Quarriers. Chaitzim quarriers. Lachtsoif to quarry Avne Gozis. Livnos to be used for the base Swelokim. What else? Uvar Zilarov. They had to mine iron in abundance. Lamismirim. Now for nails, it's not clear. It's very, there's discussion in the commentators. What do they need nails for in the base Hamigdash? What do you need nails for?
Put together various.
We know everything there is to know about the Beis Hamikdash, right? We have Masechta Midos, Masechta Yoma. We don't really have nails. Where are there nails in the Beis Hamikdash? They're stone and they're. And okay, you attach the wood. It's not clear. The different ideas suggest it. But the needle, it says. It's not just. It says Larov. Uvarzel nails. How many nails do you need already? Larov in abundance. We make such an issue. They don't mention every type of thing they need. You can imagine they must have needed hundreds of things. Go to a contractor. Look at his van. You can't imagine what's in there. He himself doesn't know all of the different things he has collected over the years to do construction. You need a million things when you're involved in a construction project. The Pasuk has to emphasize they needed an enormous amount of barzel. Why? Because of the nails. Talk to a contractor. Have him list the main things, the most important things he needs to build a house. He's not going to tell you nails. You need nails, but it's not the it's the most important thing in the top of his head. La mismerim. So it says, ledalsos. It means something else, which I don't know what it means. Ledalsos, doors. They needed the la mismerim, ledalsos. Nails for the doors, hasharm of the gates. Ulemachberos. And for connecting sockets, it's not clear what these things are. Heichin David appeared from Barzel, unechoshes larov ein mishkol copper, and it cannot even, it was so numerous, abundant, cannot even be measured weight. That's what it says. Okay, let's see over here. One more pasuk. The atzad ozim lein mispar cedar wood. Le'ein mispar beyond count. Ki heviu, who brought the provided the wood? This was done by the people who live in Lebanon, who live all the way up north. They were the experts in wood chopping and in woodwork. Ki heviu hatzidonim v'hatzoyrim, Tsor and Sidon, two neighboring nations or islands, either their islands, Crete or Tyre. Or they're part of Lebanon. It's not exactly clear. They provided all of the raw materials. So you have an accounting of barzel, stone, and nechoshes, atse arozim. All of these are the main things that were provided for the building of the Beis Hamikdash, and it was done, provided, prepared by none other than David HaMelech himself in preparation for Shlomo. Now let's see Rashi. Rashi says Pasuk Beis. Very interesting. We'll also first do the Mitzudos. Pasuk Beis is Hagedim. Who are the Gedim? Hey Ma Givoinim. Okay, Pasuk Gimel. Le Mismurim La Sois Mismorim Hamitztorchim El Hadalosos to make nails that we need for the doors. Ule Machbaros. So it's Lomel Chaber Keresh Lo Keresh. Ule Machbaros are clamps or sockets to connect one beam to another beam. A mishkol lohoyem me'afshel ladas hamishkol l'gudel haribud. It was so much; it was impossible to know the number. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi says lichnais esagedim geirim shnisgairu shloyrotza. Now it says here, according to Rashi, geirim shnisgairu. It's a pella. This means, according to the Mitzudos, it means the gevainim. So the gevainim were definitely they were illegal immigrants. Right, as Mr. Blatter said, illegal immigrants, the Gevainim. And therefore, they're Geirus. There was a Geirus, but they were in a lower status. They have a lower status in the Yichus of Klal Yisrael. But according to Rashi, at face value, he doesn't say that. He says, Geirim Shniskayru, which simply means, it means full-fledged converts. How could it be that David would go and reduce them to slave labor, Vahavtem Esager? There's a special mitzvah when it comes to a ger. You have to be super, super careful when you deal with a ger tzedek. A ger tzedek has a special mitzvah d'oraisa v'ahavtem es hager. There are many stories about Gedolei Yisrael. When it comes to gerim, it's a whole different league. It's a whole different league. V'ahavtem es hager. I know a place where a certain Rosh Yeshiva, Bali Tshuva, he says that's not what we do here. I love Bali Tshuva, but there are other yeshivas, there are other places that are more suited for people who are Bali Tshuva, even though they're very, you know, there are other places. That's not what we specialize in this institution. And then Gerim, they certainly don't specialize in it, but a ger comes, they roll out the red carpet. Because it's a pasuk of a half the mesager game is in the Eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, so here it says it's a pella. David reduced the gerim to the lowest status, slave labor. Bisrael, why? Shloiratzel lahavid bisrael avoidas perach. He didn't want Klal Yisrael to do slave crushing labor. Chaymotzinu b'shlomo l'mata. End of Rashi appears to be saying the Gerim Shnei Skyru does not then mean Jews, Gerei Tzedek, because the Psukim the Rashi are quoting are the Chitim, are quoting from the Kenanim. The Kananim, who are not really allowed to enter into Klal Yisrael, they only are there on a temporary basis or due to circumstance. So they are the ones who did the crushing labor. Now, I just want to tell you a vart that I saw, just Hashkocha Pratis. I saw this vart, and I think it's interesting. It ties into what David here is doing with the term that the Mefarish chose, Perach. Those of you who are learning, many of you are here learning Daf Yomi. Soon you're going to come to Daf Kuf Yud Zayin in Masechta Pesachim. Arvei Pesachim, it talks about a very good question. Why in the Nusach of Kiddush Friday night do we say that Shabbos is Zecher LiYetzias Mitzrayim? Better question, why in the Aseres Hadibros, in the second set of Aseres Hadibros, Shabbos, why do you have a Shabbos? Because ki eder yisav yeretz Mitzrayim, Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim, and you should remember that you were a slave. In the first Dibros, in Parshas Yisro, the reason the Torah tells us, the reason why we observe Shabbos is because the Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. So why do we observe Shabbos? Ma'aseh Bereishis. Why do we observe Shabbos in Parshas Voeschanan? Because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the question is, what in the world does Yetzias Shabbos have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? What's going on? What does it have to do? So there are answers. Some we say Mizmishlim Hashabbos Moshe Rabbeinu. He was able to he convinced Paro to give the Jews one day off from work, and on that day they had off from work. They were able to learn Torah, and they were able to encourage themselves to come to some degree of Yiras Shemayim to prepare for Yetzias Mitzrayim. All right, there are many different answers. What? But they're all answers. They don't really. The question is better than the answer. What does Shabbos have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? So there's a Tosfos who gives another answer. Again, the answer is just an answer. But let me read you the Tosfos. L'kach kavu zeich li Yetzias Mitzrayim v'shamati mei harabeinu mem. So I heard this part. I heard this whole shir from the Novominska Rebbe. Mitzvah Shabbos and Rabbi Frankel's and Rabbi Halberstam Shul on here on 21st Avenue and Avenue J. That every Mitzvah Shabbos visiting Rosh Hashiva gives a shir, a sugyon daf yomi, current daf yomi. Rabbi Kaplowitz, he's been doing this already for who knows 15, 20 years, very popular, very chashuva thing. Every Mitzvah Shabbos, a major, major league Rosh Hashiva comes in, even from far away, and gives a sugya in the daf yomi. So this week was the opening header, was the first week. The Novominska Rebbe was the darshan, so he gave the shir. That the custom is, at the end of the shir, they always say for 5-10 minutes, agoda. Either agoda on the daf or agoda for the parish. So he says, since it's talking about, so he quoted, he said over this, agoda, and part of his drash, he quoted this thesis. Why? So it says here, Meharam, Sheyesh B'medrish, Lefish B'mitzrayim, Avdu Oysam Yisrael B'perech. Right? Vayavidu oisam beforech. They slave labor. So Tosis says, now this is a Tosis. This is not a Chassidish Rebbe. It's not even a Baal HaTurim. This is a Tosis. Uperech ba'at bash vav gimolan. Now at bash, so you need to change the letters. You break up the aleves into two parts. Aleph through Chaf, the first 11 letters, and then Chaf through Lamed through Tav, and you interchange the first letter with the last letter. Aleph goes is matched up with Tav, Beis is matched off with Shin, Gimel is matched up with Resh, Dalet is Kuf, and so on and so forth. So when you interchange Pei, what letter is it interchanged with? Vav. When you interchange Resh, we interchange it with Gimel. Resh is the third to last letter, and we need to change Lamed, that goes with Chaf. Perech Chaf. Chaf is interchanged with Lamed. So Vav Gimel Lamed. And now we have to go two steps. What's the gematria of Vav Gimel Lamed? Vav and Gimel is 9. Lamed is 30. 39. Vayavidu, so Tosfos says, Vayavidu b'nei Yisrael b'farech. What labor did the Jewish people do? They did 39 categories of labor in Egypt. Tosfos. Two steps. At Bash, then the Gematria is 39. They did in Egypt 39 categories of labor. Hashem released us from Avoidas Perach. Therefore, on Shabbos, we don't do 39 categories of labor. Shabbos defined by the Lamites Melachos. Uchshnegalu Mitzrayim Hizirah HaShabbos Lishbos Me Oisam Lamites Melachos. That is what Tosfos says. Shabbos has to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim. Vayavidu Oisam Beforech Adbash Lamit Adbash turns into Lamites Melachos. Okay, so what's very interesting is that why the Gemara tells us, why do we have 39 categories of labor? It doesn't tell us this medrash. It's the Gemara is in Sefer Shabbos. One of two reasons. Because when Hashem created the world, there were 39 categories of labor in creation. We don't know exactly what that means. In Maaseh Bereishis, there are 39 categories. And the other popular reason the Gemara says, because in the building of the Mishkan, there were exactly 39 categories of labor. And everything that we do, that's really the primary reason. Every malacha, when we want to define the essence, the nature of the malacha, binyan. What is binyan? So there are many different types of construction. Well, let's go to the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the template. The way we find binyan in the Mishkan, that's the way the malacha is going to be defined. So here we have two different parallel worlds. Two parallel worlds. We have the building of the Mishkan, which is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And we have 39 categories of crushing labor in Mitzrayim. What is David doing? David now is building the Beis HaMikdash. Building the Beis HaMikdash basically involves Avodas Perach. Isn't that what it comes out? If we have here two primary reasons for building for Lamites Melachos, one is because the 39 categories of labor are called Avodas Perach. On the other hand, the 39 categories of labor are exactly the labor that is needed to construct the Beis HaMikdash. Because all the melachos of Shabbos come from the Beis HaMikdash. That means something amazing. The building of the Beis HaMikdash by definition is called Avodas Perach. That's a shocking thing to say. You would say that the building of the Beis HaMikdash is the ultimate privilege. Right? It's the ultimate privilege to be part of this construction project. It's true, it is. But you have to understand, to build the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't come easy. Building of the Beis HaMikdash comes with yigiyah, it comes with effort, with a lot of toil. Not only does it come with toil, physical toil, a spiritual toil, which corresponds. It's called Avodas Perach. To build the Beis HaMikdash, we must be involved in Avodas Perach. And David didn't want, the physical Avodas Perach to be done by the members of Klal Yisrael, and therefore he gave it over to the Gerim, which we're calling the Givonim, and those illegal immigrants living in the land.
Mexicans.
What?
It's like the Mexicans.
They got the Avodas Perach. I thought that was very interesting. How you so this word? How Rashi says, "Shaloyrotz lahavid biyishol avodas perach." Perach. Therefore, we gave it over. What is avodas perach for? For the building of the Beis Hamikdash. That's exactly right. Because the building of the Beis Hamikdash involved 39 categories of labor, and the 39 categories of labor, what Tosfos says is the avodas perach of Mitzrayim. Is exactly the same thing. David didn't want the physical avodas perach to be done by the Jews. Therefore, he gave it over to the Givonim and to the other people. It would be a reminder of Mitzrayim. Okay, that's very interesting. Let's go to the next Rashi, if there is one. Gimel, the same thing. So who? Oh, yeah, Betzal. Oh, yeah. So they who did the avodas perach? Betzalel, Aholiyah, and all the members of Klal Yisrael. So what's the difference? Why there was it a privilege? And why when it comes to the bayis, is it not a privilege? I don't know the answer.
Holy work and manual labor.
Maybe the difference is there's between a bayis and a mishkan. A mishkan, it's a small scale structure. A building, it's already a whole different category. For example, putting up a sukkah. Putting up a sukkah, al pi halacha, a Jew has to put up the schach. It's a privilege to put up the sukkah. But when was the last time you saw Yeshiva Bachim with hard hats putting up the steel frame of a building and laying this and doing the cement and doing the electric? You hire professional people to do this. You don't have a. It's not necessarily because as a. So maybe that's the difference. A mishkan was a much smaller scale type of structure. So there, the Jews themselves were involved in its construction.
How about the Erev Rav?
Whereas no, the Erev Rav not. But whereas here building a bias. A whole campus, a complex. That's already different. That we was assigned to the Givonim and the Gerim. Okay, let's see the next Rashi. We'll finish up the next Rashi. Pasuk Gimel, whatever that word means in Old French. What's a nagel?
In the Yiddish,
is
a nail.
A nail?
Nogel is
yes.
A nail.
No, actually,
you spoke Yiddish.
Menachem.
A nagel. A nail that you nail in is a chvak, and a nagel is a fingernail.
Yeah, fingernail.
A nagel is a
fine points of Yiddish.
Do you have the term of chvak?
Don't forget about our friend Chiram, right? That's all mentioned in Sefer Yechezkel and Sefer. It gets on, we'll mention in Sefer Melachim. He was the one, he was the partner with Shlomo to bring in the expert craftsmen. Wood craftsmen to assist in the building of the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, we'll stop here. Okay, let's do some Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. Okay, we have to do the Shi'arim Mitzvah Halacha Gimel.